Did Thomas Crapper really invent the toilet? How did Soviet-era famines give us Tony the Tiger? How did Sigmund Freud's nephew use bananas to start a 36-year civil war? You can learn all about these and hundreds of stories in my new book, Facts That Aren't True. Link in the description.
So, you kind of talked about speciation. Do you think that's anything we've observed happen firsthand?
Yeah, we know we have, yeah.
Okay, do you have an example?
Yeah, the London Underground mosquito. The what's it called? The Big Bird ground finch. It's like common name, like colloquial name. They called it the Big Bird lineage. I can't remember what it's officially called. Maybe it's the something island ground finch or something like that. Daphne Major is the island where it happened. Peter and Rosemary Grant saw it happen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's two examples.
So we basically, how did we figure out that speciation happened in those cases?
By observing them. The fact that they no longer reproduce with other members in their genus.
And how do we know that they once reproduced?
Well, they watched it happen, like with the London Underground mosquitoes. They're able to, and genetic testing, you can, through genetic testing, determine what their ancestors are.
Uh-huh. So,
like we know domestic dogs came from wolves, not African spotted dogs, for example. Now, we haven't seen throughout, like, you can't, like, if I wanted to be pedantic and uncharitable, I could say, oh, you've seen every dog be bred. Well, no, but humans they are responsible. They are witness to that process. There's nothing wrong with saying that. And it's testable. What are they related to most closely? It's wolves. We know that modern dogs come from wolves, not foxes, not African spotted dogs or some other canine.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she got raptured.
Yeah, that was my bad. Sorry. And so basically there's some updates to this mosquito experiment saying that they actually came from Egypt and not London. So you can check that one out. And I'm not sure what the other one you said was. I kind of missed it. You said some big bird.
It's a type of ground finch on Daphne Major. Peter and Rosemary Grant watched this happen over the course of several years, starting like in the 80s.
And what did they watch?
So it was some type of cactus finch, and I don't remember what the other type of finch was, but they basically hybridized and produced a brand new species of finch. But even if we'd never seen any kind of speciation ever occur, the idea, the hypothesis that that has happened, and we're really actually just talking about evolution, is still testable, and it's passed every single test.
Like what?
Genetics.
Yeah. So do you think that we see like new proteins with novel functions form?
There may be some examples of that. I'm not sure if I can think of one off the top of my head. But we have seen mutations in labs that have produced beneficial new functions, famously the citrate thing. Long-term E. coli experiment. I can't remember the name of the guy that's been running that for all these years. But yeah, the one bacteria evolved the ability to metabolize citrate, which I think the deal with that is they can normally do it, but only in the presence or... Yeah, and then it evolved to be able to do it separate from that. But now there's other examples. Like, for example, the best one I know of is they took E. coli. I think it was E. coli. I know it was bacteria. And they took out the lactose metabolizing gene from it. I don't know if they took out the entire operon or what, but they genetically removed its ability to digest lactose. And then, lo and behold, the bacteria spontaneously regained the ability to do that. I think it might have actually occurred in multiple different instances, or that may be a different one where we've seen that happen. I can try to look it up in my book here real quick. You'd think I would remember because I wrote the damn thing, but you'd be surprised what you forget.
That is true. I agree with that. So the citrate one, they basically, like, normally were able to use it as a carbon source. And then, like, that was only active during aerobic conditions. Then they found that they could, like, use citrate in anaerobic conditions. I would argue, like, this wouldn't be necessarily a new function. They say that basically the gene was, like, translocated under a promoter that would make it always active instead of just sometimes active. So, yeah. You know, I would argue that that ability was already present.
Well, evolution is descent with modification. So a gene being able to be in a weird kind of way, almost overexpressed or expressed in new under new conditions is exactly the type of gradual evolution that the theory of evolution would propose.
Yeah, so I agree with the definitions of evolution, but the implications of them when they say that, you know, basically descent with modification or changes in allele frequency would lead us to where we're at today, like, that's a whole nother story, because you have to have, you know, new proteins forming, like with the allele definition, having like changes in allele expression, you know, that's not going to give you new alleles.
Taylor, please tell me you don't believe in Noah's flood.
Is this like some type of rebuttal to what I said?
It would be a monumental contradiction on your part if you believed in it.
I think that Noah's flood's a bit off topic, but yeah, I do. If you're wondering about like microevolution, I definitely believe in that. And okay.
The thing you're saying can't happen absolutely would have to happen if the Noah's Ark story is true. How many animals do you think were on that ark?
Do you think that I have like a number? But somebody did write a paper about Noah's Ark. I think this is a bit off topic, though.
It's absolutely
but
not.
Yeah, they wrote a paper. It is absolutely off topic. But they did. Somebody wrote a paper about, how the animals, basically saying that it would be plausible for it to be the case that the animals would be able to be on Noah's Ark, because you'd only need, you know, two of each kind, and then not the fish and not the birds and stuff like that. But I think that that's a little bit off topic.
It's absolutely not. Okay. I'm going to demonstrate that even you don't believe what you're saying, because what you're saying, this thing about you can't get new proteins with new functions or whatever, this absolutely has to happen in the most insane, hyper-driven way imaginable for what you believe to be true. So, like, for example, how many species of canine do you think were on that ark?
I'm not sure.
Do you think it was just two?
I'm not sure. Probably more. There's
how
different
many
types of canines?
Well, I
don't
think there
know.
Were clean animals.
Is canine a kind?
I would say so, but there could be different types.
If canine is a kind, then there would just be two canines on that ark.
Are you trying to like force me into a position?
I'm trying to keep you honest about this model you have of the world and if it fits with your criticisms of other models of the world.
I think you're presenting your model at the time and you're kind of deflecting.
No, this is literally yours.
What's happening?
Well, Planet Peterson, I'm reading here Genesis 7. It says they had seven pairs of each and every kind of clean animal. So I think there was approximately maybe 2,000 to 7,000 total.
This is really off topic.
Like, it's absolutely not off topic.
Did you do a presentation on Noah's Ark?
Did I?
Did you? Are you coming up here to talk about Noah's Ark? Is that what's talking
about evolution. You believe that evolution has to occur because a few thousand species need to turn into at least 1.5 million that we have today.
But they still look very similar, right? I mean, you can put
it doesn't. It doesn't matter. So, Taylor, you need to commit to a position. How many canines were on the ark?
I don't have to commit to a position.
So your worldview is completely immune to any kind of scientific scrutiny. Why are you here?
What? Because I'm asking you questions.
If your worldview is immune to any kind of scientific scrutiny, then why are you participating in a conversation about this?
Obviously, you can't defend your worldview, which is
what
you're supposed to be doing, and now you're trying to deflect it to my worldview.
I can make you prove that we have the evidence that evolution occurred.
You're up here to prove your idea of how we got here. Okay. I'm questioning.
I will just tell everybody statement. Because you will not engage in this. So, for example, if there were two canines on the ark, we have multiple different species of canine today. Wolves and foxes, I can't remember which way it goes, but one of them has twice as many chromosomes as the other one does. Okay. Do you think that new proteins are found in one of those species versus the other?
I think wolves and foxes are different.
Yes, and they are the descendants of a singular canine kind that was on that ark.
How do you know that?
So how many canines were on the ark?
I just said earlier, I don't know. You're trying to force me a position because you can't defend yours.
No, your position is literally a contradiction. How many frogs do you think
were
on the ark?
I never took a position. I'm taking the negative.
How many frogs do you think were on the ark?
You can't defend your position, so you're
yes,
forcing
I can.
Me to have one.
What I'm doing first is
you're
proving
deflecting.
That according to your criticisms of the traditional model, according to what can't happen, which falsifies the traditional model, your beliefs about the world have to be false. I'll just make this really simple because, again, you refuse to commit to a position because you refuse to make your views subject to any kind of scrutiny, which is insanely dishonest, but I'll just let you do that. But I'll explain how this works for everybody. No, not every single living thing needed to be on the ark. I doubt the ark had an aquarium. It obviously didn't exist, but we're just granting this. It doesn't matter because either way, that ark is only going to house a few thousand species at best. And what happened from that is at least many hundreds of thousands of species came about from it in such an extremely short amount of time. It's been 4,000 years since then, but we haven't been gradually gaining species every single day. If that was the case, it would be scientifically known. Excuse me, I had to burp there. So we can look at simple examples like the fact that there are 50 different families, which is what creationists call a kind in general. There are 50 different families of frogs alone. So the evolution of this idea that something always produces after its kind has to be false according to the creationist worldview. It absolutely has to be false. And then, like with the canines, with the tremendous differences in chromosome numbers, but whatever, it doesn't matter. You're having thousands of species at the most turn into hundreds of thousands of species. So something, some kind of event, like a new kind of protein coming up, absolutely has to occur for a tiny number of species becoming hundreds of thousands of species. So we got that out of the way. What do you want to know? Do you want me to tell you what the evidence of evolution is?
Yeah.
Okay, if evolution were true, what would the evidence look like?
You'd see new proteins forming with novel functions.
That's the only thing you can imagine. That is the only thing you can imagine.
New genetic sequences form new, you know, DNA gives code for proteins. So yeah, novel proteins.
Well, we certainly have direct evidence of that.
In what case?
What about a change in fire?
Humans have multiple copies of several genes.
So?
So that's exactly the thing you're asking for. We could also look at, do you know what Hox genes do?
Multiple copies of several genes. What is a new protein there? Like, what's going on?
You didn't say new protein. You said like added duplicated
novel
DNA.
Protein, novel function. That's what
that
I
was
said.
One of the things you said. The other thing you said was like duplications or added information to the genome or whatever.
I never.
Do you
said
know
that.
What Hox? Yes, you did. Do you know what Hox
no,
genes
I
are?
No, I didn't. Duplications would not be new proteins with new functions.
Do you know what Hox genes are?
Are those? I've heard of them before.
They're genes that control for the development of the body. So, like, you can transpose a section of, like, you can take an embryo and you can cut off a piece of tissue where the Hox genes that control the development of a limb are happening, and you can patch that piece of tissue onto, like, its backside, and it'll grow a leg out of that part of its body. Wild experiments with Hox genes have been performed. So,
right. Yeah, they're the Hox genes, I recall now. Yep. They're like the body layout. They control like the body layout in animals.
Yes. So,
right.
For example, insects are a type of arthropod. They have three pairs of legs. Crustaceans are a type of arthropod that have five sets of legs. Myriapods, like millipedes and centipedes, have multiple of them. What we find is, okay, we have a body plan, the arthropod. But they have the same generic body plan, but they express it differently. What we find is duplications of those Hox genes and then differences in how long those Hox genes are active for during development. So the kind of thing that produces additional structures is known about in science.
Okay. That's still not new proteins or new functions.
Okay, let me see. I don't want to read through my book here because that would just take forever and we'd be sitting in silence. So give me a second here.
And while we do that, why don't we just consider, you know, after the flood with a radically altered environment, geographic isolation, right, ecological niches to fill, maybe the original kinds diversified rapidly within centuries. I mean, I think they've been able to spot that in wolves.
Taylor, feel free to respond to that while I try to look for something here.
I think that we won't know exactly how many of each species was, you know, on the ark. I don't claim to. So,
yeah, I don't think it's specifically stated.
Yeah, well, we can know what the upper limit would be.
Yeah. I think, yeah, analysis has been done. I think I read it was 2,000 to 7,000.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, do you know about type 3 secretory proteins and how they are remarkably similar to the bacterial flagella protein structure?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Okay, so is your claim that that doesn't count because nobody saw it happen, even though the evidence of it happening is predictable and has been found?
Yeah, I would like to see, like, you know, it actually happen. In things like the Linsky experiment where they're, like, speeding up the evolutionary timeline through, like, exponential growth of these bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can ask you a different question. Like, how do you think in general, like, the DNA code came about? Would you classify that in, like, abiogenesis or evolution?
Well, it can be literally both. Evolution, as in just change over time, or even natural selection, the chemical environment that would have produced nucleic acids, perhaps autocatalytic ones, like an RNA world first world or a metabolism first world, natural selection would have been happening. We've created like synthetic molecules and seen them be able to compete against each other. You can do this like with amyloids, I believe, in the lab. So we have I don't know what you would call them, like analogs or whatever, in labs that demonstrate in principle that this kind of thing can happen.
So how do you think like new chromosomes and like how do you think like do you think
genes
like
get duplicated all the time? We know that this happens. Right.
Okay. So like with these like duplications, do you think like a point mutation or like multiple point mutations would be enough to like get new proteins?
Well, a point mutation could result in a new amino acid, which could theoretically produce a new protein.
Right. Yeah, it'd just be nice if we saw like that happen, because it seems like what we're observing is like, you know, like translocations. We can also see like bacteria switching out their DNA, but like fundamentally it seems like the same functions are still present in like these types of experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's like epigenetics too, like you know, adapting to your environment, like turning on and off genes that are already present. So, you know, gaining this like this new, you know, DNA that would produce like, you know, novel proteins with novel functions would kind of be really key in showing it. But, you know, if you want to get back with me on that, that's fine.
Yeah, I have some stuff in my book where I know there's an experiment referenced in there where they find, I want to say it was with the compensatory mutations, where they found a whole bunch of single point mutations that brought the organism, it was a bacteria in this case, back to its original fitness while having an additional trait. It was really more of an overexpression of antibiotic resistance. So it was able to maintain a new function and then get back to its same level of fitness. And that was done, that was seen in, they ran this trial like 80 different times, and it was seen in over 70 of the different lineages. It's not exactly what you're asking for, but it's in the neighborhood of mm-hmm. it. Man, I can't find it though. I don't remember which specific claim it's tied to. So, so I'm curious why you seem to pick something very, esoteric in particular for the grounds for denying evolution. It reminds me of what Jerry Bergman does. He had this debate like a week ago with Gutsit Gibbon, and it was a horribly pathetic performance because they were debating, does the fossil record support human evolution? And it unequivocally does. And he knows that. So the whole time he just said, well, I don't see how mutations could take you from an ape-like ancestor to a human. Therefore, evolution can't of humans could not have happened. And I just flat out asked him, Jerry, if humans did evolve, what would the fossil record look like? And he said, oh, it would look like what we currently have, all the intermediate species. And it's like, well, there you go. So we do have scientific evidence of it. There are other things we don't know, but that's just an argument from ignorance. If I don't know how this one thing happened, then therefore the entire idea is false. I mean, scientifically, like plate tectonics, the idea, Alfred Wegener came up with it before we understood the mechanism that explained how the continents could have got to other places, but we had extraordinarily strong supporting evidence for it before that. So is this thing about, well, I don't see how you could get new proteins. We currently don't have a scientific understanding of that. Why does that derail the entire genetic and geologic collection of evidence for evolution to you?
Because I think that's what we need to see to like have like new types of organisms form. Like we'd have to have like a significantly different like genetic code form for each of them. Like we see animals now, like they vary in genetic code from one another, depending on how related they are. So, you know, that's basically watching this process happen would be
that's really, what evolution would say would happen. If evolution were true, if everything was created, there's absolutely no reason to see any kind of genetic hierarchy at all. But if evolution did happen, then humans should be most closely related to chimpanzees, and we are. Mammals should all be most closely related to each other, and they are. And so I don't understand. Do you not? Is that evidence of evolution?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure. So evolution would predict hierarchies of relatedness. Humans should be more related to all the apes than anything else, and we are. The mammals should all be more closely related to each other than they are to anything else, and they are. So do you regard that as evidence of evolution?
No.
Why?
Because I mean, you could just say they're created that way.
It's not mutually exclusive, though. That evidence right. can be consistent with both ideas. I don't think it predicts, I don't think creation predicts that at all, because it doesn't predict anything at all. But that evidence could be true in both cases. So I'm going to ask the same question. Isn't the evidence we have with regard to genetics evidence of evolution?
I don't think so.
I'm not asking you to claim that evolution is true. I'm asking you, what would, if evolution was true, what would the genetic evidence look like?
Oh, like like where we're just looking at the genetics and like making kind of like assumptions? I don't know. I think that there, at the very least, would have like more junk DNA. And that was at one point a strong argument that they used for evolution, but then we found out the DNA is not junk, so it's kind of like...
Most of it still has an unknown function. But no, the question is, with regard to genes, which what genetics is the study of is heritability and relatedness. So with respect to genes, what would the evidence of evolution be if it was true?
Like I was saying, like, if you're not going to consider junk DNA, you're saying just in terms of genes, what would it look like?
Because that's what genetics is. It's the study of genes. It's not the study of junk DNA. I didn't ask you what the genomic evidence would be.
Sure. I
think you absolutely do know.
I want to finish what I was saying before. Like, I would say that, the lack of, you know, there being much junk DNA would be like a prediction for creation. Like that it has a purpose, and that's kind of what we found, that the DNA has purpose, even the junk DNA has a role, and that's what you'd predict if you...
The majority of DNA still has no known function.
I don't know. I don't agree with that.
Well, you're wrong. I mean, I don't know what to tell you about that.
Like even the non-coding sequences have a function.
A lot of them do, not all of them do. Okay, so Taylor, humans cannot metabolize vitamin C, correct?
Yeah, are you saying you need other cofactors present?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying we can't metabolize vitamin C, and you agree. Do we have the gene for it?
I'm not sure for vitamin C genes.
We do. We have the gene for that. Okay. I think we have multiple copies of it, actually. So creation does not predict that. That is junk DNA. We have the gene for it, and it doesn't work anymore. That's junk DNA. We have the gene for making vitamin C, but it doesn't work anymore. We have junk DNA. And so creation doesn't predict that.
Okay, I would have to, I would have to obviously look into this. I'm not familiar with the vitamin C genes. But yeah, I'm not sure in terms of genetics what evolution would look like. I would say
But it's
that
so incredibly obvious. We would be related to, most closely related to apes, and we are.
well, yeah, it's 98.8% with chimpanzees, and I guess approximately 85% with mice. But I guess the steel man from the other position, if we wanted to just indulge it, it could be similarities that reflect functionality, just like
That
engineers
completely
reuse
falls
hardware and
apart.
code.
Yeah. That is absolutely disprovable. And that's not Taylor's specific position. It might be, but she hasn't articulated it, so I haven't attacked it, but I might. But no, Taylor, it's so incredibly obvious that we have categories of organisms. We started doing this a very long time ago. We grouped all the primates together and all the mammals as being distinct from the others. And so it is predicted that those groups we came up with should be the most closely related. And then later we discovered, there is a hereditary molecule. And everything we thought about those relationships was genetically confirmed. So we do have the genetic evidence for evolution, and it's overwhelmingly large.
I don't know. I don't think so.
You don't think that primates are more
But
closely
I think
related
that
to each
you need
other
to
than other
show it.
organisms? What do you mean you don't think so?
I think I don't think that would be proof either way, because that's kind of like looking after the fact and making
It's
assumptions.
not looked after
But
the fact. It was
I think
predicted
we
ahead of
showed.
time that primates ought to be more closely related to each other than they are to any other form of life on the planet. And that is the case.
So.
So we have
I don't
overwhelming
see that on
evidence.
yours.
The evidence was predicted, and then it could have turned out to be wrong, but the genetic evidence instead was confirmatory of what we thought. So we do
So
have the
if
evidence.
certain species are very similar morphologically and physiologically to another species, and DNA is the code that we are created in order to, basically hold our genetic information, then wouldn't you imagine that if they ha are more similar, they would have a more similar genetic code and would be created that way? I mean, I
What
don't see
you,
this as a strong point.
yeah, the idea that morphology is the signature of an intelligent designer is absolutely testable and absolutely disprovable. Would you like me to disprove it for you?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Do what would be a good example? Sharks and dolphins, they share the same kind of environment, right?
Dolphins breathe air and sharks breathe water, but do they
I
share the
asked if
same?
they sh yeah,
I
the
mean, we share
environment.
the same type of environment with bacteria. That's not really
What
showing
is it?
anything.
What is it that a dolphin and a shark have to both be morphologically, quote unquote, designed for?
Many things. I'm assuming you're saying swimming, but breathing as well. They're much different. This is not a good argument.
The
We're in the same environment as bacteria.
breathing is a singular. I like how you picked one trait about them and said that it blows up every other comparison we could do between them. That's not how it works at all. So they
Okay.
share the overwhelming number, like from a design perspective, smooth, streamlined, torpedo-shaped bodies, fins and flippers, right?
Yeah, but I think that they're much different. I think they were
Okay.
designed much differently.
What is, no, their design is actually remarkably similar.
Okay, I think that is different, but subjective.
Right. So, what's more similar to a dolphin, a hippopotamus or a shark?
It depends on what you're saying. Like, are you saying the fact that they
Which
breathe air?
one's designed more similar? All things considered, a hippopotamus or a shark? To a dolphin.
you might say a shark.
Correct. Which one is genetically more similar?
I'm assuming that you're going to say the hippopotamus and the dolphin.
Yeah. So, right. Morphology, as guided by genes, being an indication of creation, is falsifiable, and it's been falsified.
It's not like so. In order literally to establish, hold on, you keep interrupting me. It's really annoying. In order to establish cause and effect, like did these things come about? Did these different organisms come about through successive mutations in the genome? Like, you need to establish that cause and effect, you would need to do a controlled experiment, which is what we do to establish cause and effect.
Literally,
you
false.
Can. Okay, then how else would you do it?
How do you solve a murder, Taylor? How do you solve a murder, Taylor? By looking for the evidence post fact. That's how you do it.
This guy's like interrupting me constantly. So you can theorize, you know, that these things, okay, they look like this. It's what we're assuming happened. But yeah, in science to explain natural phenomena and reality, what you do is a controlled experiment. Now, a murder would be as well that we'd. What? That's not false.
It is literally false.
To establish cause
Taylor,
and effect.
Taylor, are you a flat earther? Do you think black holes exist?
There's a purpose to doing a controlled experiment because you can isolate the variables and really get down.
Do black holes exist? Do black holes exist?
Hold on, I'm still answering your other question, dude. You're like acting kind of unhinged. Okay,
do black holes exist? I'm proving that your entire line of reasoning here, I forgot to do the air quotes, is completely false. Do black holes exist?
Okay. Hold on. Can I answer your other question?
It's not going to go any other way other than the way I want it to go. Because I'm the very special guest and it's my very special day. Do black holes exist?
A murder would be after the fact.
Do black holes exist?
Yes. And then moving on.
Did we do experiments to prove that black holes exist?
There's different functions.
What controlled experiment that makes black holes have we done?
Hold on.
What controlled experiment that creates black holes did we do? Have we ever done?
But
you're not getting away with this, Taylor. I don't care. You can fucking leave. What controlled experiment did we ever do that creates black holes?
That's an observational study, not a cause and effect
It's
analysis.
A scientific fact that black holes exist, and their existence was predicted by scientific work.
You gotta chill out, dude. I don't care if you're the guest. You're not gonna come in here and act like that, bro. Unhinged.
Yeah, Squiggles, I don't know who the fuck you think you are or who you think you're talking to, but I don't take orders from you either.
I came in here. Well, guess what? I'm a mod.
I don't care.
I don't care if you're a guest, bro, and you're a little special boy, your little specialness. You can't come in and act like that, dude.
Yeah, actually, I can.
Treat a female with respect. How about that?
Squiggles.
Did your mom raise you, dude, or what? All right, dude, listen. You're not going to run the show, bro. If Omnivore's not going to step in, I will.
Lion, hold on.
So why is nobody holding Taylor accountable from dodging all of the questions? That we didn't create black holes with a controlled experiment.
Just a minute. I'm modding.
I will be on better behavior from here on out. I promise.
The heat level, thank you.
Taylor, go ahead and say whatever you want to say.
I just, I was doing some research on some of the claims that you made. I looked into the vitamin C genes. One of the genes is unknown, but the other two have different functions. And then also I was reading the paper about the big birds, and apparently there is some evidence that they can still mate with the original species, making it not a completely new species in the sense. But there are differences as well in the birds too, though. But apparently it's not completely new species. And I can share these links with you as well. I shared the mosquito link with you already.
Okay, cool. So let's go back to what we were talking about most recently. There are no scientific controlled experiments that create black holes. But nobody, except a flat earther or whatever, says that black holes don't exist. So why is it that I do not require a controlled experiment to know about the existence of black holes, when, but I do for some reason need a controlled experiment to when it comes to the genetic relatedness between sharks, hippos, and dolphins?
So doing the experiment where you're saying like the hippos and dolphins are similar, like you're like comparing their genes, and you're going to say, okay, well, this one's more like this, and then make inferences based on it. Like, you know, since you believe we evolved, you're going to make evolutionary inferences based on that. So,
I was doing a creationist inference, because I took what you said about morphology being a product of design and morphology being a consequence of genetics to be able to make a prediction about the evidence for design we see in nature, and it fell apart. So I was actually taking your view on that.
Okay. I don't take the view that we can, you know, look at genes and then make inferences after the fact on either, you know, creation or evolution, because I think
analyzing the genes is not done after the fact. The prediction about relatedness was made decades before we could study the genes. The genes.
So the effect.
What's that?
I was just going to say, so the effect is what we see today with the biodiversity. And then, so you're saying the cause was that we evolved. I'm saying the cause is creation. And then, so, you know, to establish
your
cause.
My idea is testable.
Okay, so then show me that. And then also,
entire field of genetics is the test.
Controlled experiments, so you can isolate for variables to, you know, establish cause and effect. So that's why I really put more credence on like the laboratory experiments, like, you know, Linsky's one that you mentioned earlier that would be a really good piece of evidence, like, you know, the Linsky long-term E. coli experiment, stuff like that.
What scientific evidence of creation do you have that establishes cause and effect?
Well, so I think that the creation, like that creation was created by something metaphysical, we wouldn't exactly be able to replicate it, but we can make inferences. Like, for example, I would say, you know, the idea that life formed by a creator, in these origin of life experiments, you would need a lot of heavy intervention in these experiments, controlling the pH and temperatures, and, you know, origin of life wouldn't be something that naturally would occur. I think it requires intelligent design. And, you know, looking at the origin
of life. What scientific
evidence
of design do you have?
The fact that, you know, we cannot reproduce life forming, that life doesn't naturally
form. That's not
form
evidence. That's something that somebody else can't do. Like, okay, by evidence, so I mean positive evidence in favor of your claim. And you also seem to demand cause and effect as part of the, like, body of supporting evidence. So what positive scientific evidence for creation do you have, and can you tell me anything about the cause and effect of how creation works?
Right. So with the evolutionary theory, we have, you're working in the naturalistic world. If you're saying this is something that naturally occurs, then that should be something that should be reproducible. Whereas if I'm saying I need a divine intervention to make these things happen, that would not be something that would be reproducible. And I argue
so
that,
can,
you know, the lack
never,
of reproduction
ever have any evidence in support of your claim.
I think there is evidence. I think that the DNA code gives good evidence. You know, the complex specific information we only see from intelligent designers. That's one thing. The
In what sense is that scientific evidence?
Well,
what experiment for this do you have?
Well, I proposed an experiment recently with Eggs, who is on here, and was saying that, you know, using a random nucleotide generator, or just putting nucleotide, like random nucleotide sequences, would not lead to anything productive. Whereas if you had, you know, an intelligently designed genetic code, it would actually be functional and you would require intelligent design.
Taylor, do you know what natural selection is?
Yes, like survival of the fittest.
Explain how natural selection occurs.
So basically, the most weak organisms would die off.
Oh, God.
And then that would leave more fit organisms. Right? Okay. Is that wrong? Is there something I said wrong?
To say that it's about who's weak and who isn't is so far off.
Yeah, and so the more fit organisms...
But you're missing so many details.
Reproduction of the fittest organisms would carry on their genes. And so then the non-fit organisms...
Okay, is that a random process?
I think that there wouldn't be any intentionality or end in mind. So it depends on what your definition is.
Well, that's not randomness.
I think it's a byproduct of nature. Therefore, I would say, yes, that is random, but people can disagree on the definition of random.
Your definition of random seems to be no telios, which is not what random is. That is kind of a sense of, like, people say, oh, that was so random what happened the other day, because it just, why did it happen? I have no idea. It happened for no reason or whatever, but that's a very different sense of randomness, because the kind of randomness you invoked in your experiment is a completely different kind of randomness. That is where things are, where there are no strong antecedents, where things are not causally linked or whatever. Natural selection is absolutely not like that. It is very non-random because there are antecedents for it. Like, the environment produces conditions that result in selecting certain, whatever we want to call it, phenotypes, genetic combinations, or whatever, to be selected for. So your analogy where you say, oh, well, I would test it by saying randomness can't do it, you're completely strawmanning science's view of how any of this would have happened. So it would have been an inappropriate experiment. It'd be the equivalent of me saying, I can prove Jesus isn't the Messiah. I'll put a dollar under my pillow, and if the tooth fairy doesn't come, then it's false. No, the tooth fairy has nothing to do with Jesus, and randomness is not how natural selection or evolution works.
But the natural selection of fit organisms wouldn't give us different types of organisms. That you're basically, the speciation is coming from an idea that the DNA mutated, and whenever the DNA mutation would happen, it wouldn't be something that would be like planned. It would be like kind of an accidental mutation. So it would be led by these random sequences of accidental events.
The random sequences produces the variation in the population. Darwin laid all of this out. There exists in every population a degree of variation. Some of that variation is more conducive for survival advantages in the population. Therefore, organisms with those better, like with the more favorable variations, statistically are more likely to reproduce, which drives, that's called directional selection. It drives selection in a direction, and that creates this sort of it just drives changes in the species. Like, for example, insular dwarfism or insular gigantism is a good example. It's the same kind of organism, but its body size becomes dramatically different over long periods of time because of different selective pressures. There's, like, on the island where the pygmy mammoths, where I live in California, so I've been to the La Brea Tar Pit Museum. They have really cool life-size recreations of different mammoth species. The Colombian mammoth is absolutely enormous. It's way bigger than today's African elephants. But there was also a pygmy mammoth, and they were only about the size of a cow, a little bit smaller than that, actually. In terms of weight, they're probably heavier, actually. Now, it's like, no, whatever the ancestral population for those Channel Island mammoths was, they weren't the size of the pygmy mammoths. It took, and they never gave, the ancestral population never gave birth to a mammoth specifically that small, but over huge numbers of generations, it moved in that direction.
Okay. Is that something that we watched happen, or?
Well, it's something we have extremely strong evidence for.
Okay.
i.e. pygmy mammoths, exist on that island, and the logical explanation for why would they would be smaller is so incredibly obvious, it hardly needs explaining. I'll do it anyway. An elephant is a fucking huge animal, and an island doesn't have a lot of resources, so there's pressure for them to become smaller, to have less, how would I even put that? Like demand for food and resources and whatever on the island. So all other mammoths are significantly larger than them. The ones only on this island are significantly smaller. I don't know about like transitional forms for pygmy mammoths. I don't know about that. I kind of doubt that there are many of those, but the logic and the inference, which you invoked inferences for your creation model, so we get to, anybody gets to make inferences. It's not unscientific or unfair to do that. It all fits. There's no contradiction in any of that. And it makes perfect logical and scientific sense.
So another thing that we could do, like with, you know, did we get here through evolution or creation? Another experiment is seeing if we need like multiple systems functional at one point in time for, you know, an organism to survive. And like with the start of life, you have to have multiple systems coexist. And that would be something that creation would predict, that the cell would imply more of a top-down design versus a bottom-up. If we can't see like successive number of, you know, chemical reactions begin to form life in a way that would sustain life. That would be another like creation prediction.
Yeah. God damn it. I'm probably not going to be able to find it, but I have something for that in my book too. They took bacteria and they've been able to delete its genome piece by piece, and they end up getting rid of like over 50% of it, I think, and the cell, the organism is still able to survive. I think that really flies in the face of what you're talking about. Sorry?
I think that experiment actually shows like my argument, because I think the amount of genes, it was like 492 genes at a very minimum, and I think they had to end up going back and adding some more to make it survive. So like if you need a 492 genes for even the simplest cell that we can conceive and work with, I mean, that just shows kind of what I'm saying.
In a way, but evolution would not predict that today's even unicellular organisms were the same as the very first living organisms.
I understand that. But I think that even like for DNA, if DNA was their mode for, or RNA was mode for carrying genetic information, then you would need like the genes to reproduce this RNA and DNA, which would require many genes already there. Unless you had another functional method that could accurately reproduce it.
So I misremembered slightly. My example is actually specifically about the bacterial flagella, right? So they say it's irreducibly complex. The whole thing, the whole apparatus has to be in place or it can't function.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, that's that. Well, I mean,
you can take out the radial spoke. The radial spokes you can remove and they still work. Yeah. But that's not like a part of like the key mechanism of the rotary. It is kind of like a side piece. But yeah, they have been able to remove it. But they've also found at least like 52 proteins that need to be there for the flagellum to function.
Yeah. So what this.
So I think even though you can remove some things, you still show that you need multiple functioning parts for it to work at all. That's why I don't like the word irreducibly complex. I kind of like the word like integrated systems, or, you know, multiple parts needed.
Okay. Are you aware that, like, for example, the platypus doesn't have a stomach?
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Platypuses don't have stomachs. So all other mammals have stomachs, though. So this idea that the system, I'm just calling an organism a system at this point, the idea that the system has to have, well, it's actually better to say the organism has to have all its systems in place or it doesn't function, is just literally not true. You can take any trait that any organism has, apart from being made of cells, because if you're not made of cells, you're not a living organism. You can take literally any trait, and we can see that there is a kind of life that exists without that. Jellyfish don't even have blood, right? Or a central nervous system. But they're organisms and they're alive. Now, could a human work that way? No. But that doesn't mean that life couldn't operate that in that sort of way. And if we find life on this planet that lacks all kinds of systems, but is still able to live, then there's no logical leap. How do I want to say this? Then it isn't a fantastic logical leap to say, yeah, and then through progressive changes, different organ systems could arise.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I don't like using the word irreducibly complex, because there are pieces that you can take out to an organism and it might still function. Maybe they might lose some function, but there may be like some downsides. But overall, like with the flagellum, you can, you know, remove a radial spoke protein and for the most part, it'll still rotate. But I think that what I would say more is like I said, multiple parts needed for a system to work in life. It's not just like one single unit can like then build up and still have that function. So like with DNA to protein, like the transcription translation process where you're actually carrying out the function of the genetic code, which is the genetic code just for the proteins. Basically, you need to have multiple parts for that to happen. Like even for the most simple cells, we need like 50 proteins for one ribosome, which is used for translation. So that's kind of what I would say more is like, the fact that you need multiple things for it to work, not that you can remove one thing and it still works.
Do you know what?
Yeah, like a minimum set.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Taylor, do you know what prions are?
Yes. They're like, play a role in neurodegeneration.
They're misfolded proteins that you find in the brain, and they're not good. If you have prions, like mm-hmm. write your will if you haven't already, right? But prions make copies of themselves, but they're just
my grandma has it.
They're just a molecule. Reason. Oh, geez, of course.
Thank you.
Sorry to hear that.
I know I'm not perfect. I'm not articulate. I already acknowledge that. So you can go ahead. It's not really an insult.
So prions are they make copies of themselves, but it's literally just a misfolded molecule.
Yep.
Yeah. So we have we have something as simple as I forgot what the hell you left off with that made me think about this and want to bring it up. But we have something as
translation.
No. Ribosomes? Oh, yeah. It was like the ribosomes have to be like so complex or whatever. Well, no, like because ribosomes are part of the machinery for DNA making more DNA, right? Well, but we've been able to demonstrate. I don't really know how it works with RNA, but RNA can be autocatalytic. It can make copies of itself. But we've also seen these prions do this. So literally just much more simple misfolded proteins can make copies of themselves. So yeah, I understand life today. I don't think the kind of life we see today, even the simplest bacteria, could have spontaneously formed in the most perfect imaginable conditions. But evolution is a gradualistic mechanism and a theory, I guess. It doesn't propose that what we see today would have been even the simplest forms of life we see today would have been what spontaneously formed as the first life. And we don't know what that first life was. I mean, it's like literally not knowable. It's like asking, what was the first animal God created after Adam? Like, we don't know. Even if it was true, it can't be known. So, anyways.
Right. So the prions making other prions, you know, kind of replicate their structure. I don't think that would be akin to transcription translation. It's not like holding a genetic code. It's not enacting it. And that would be like detrimental to life too. If all the proteins were now being folded into a prion, how would you have multiple proteins come about with multiple different functions?
Well, because there's never perfect fidelity when anything tries to make a copy.
What? How does that relate to what I said?
Because you said because you said you need new proteins or whatever to be generated, and yeah, any system that is like autocatalytic or self-sustaining or whatever, never has perfect fidelity, or it like essentially it mutates. It's not necessarily like genes, but there is mutation.
Okay, so you're saying like the successive events of the prions folding would like lead to other prions that are a little bit different, and so that would be like how it would get out of that hole.
In principle, it could, and so this is analogous to the amyloid world idea, where it starts with proteins. And I'm not well read on it, so I'm not going to be able to give you much. But we know that this kind of thing can happen.
Right. So, yeah, that's a whole nother topic. I would like to talk about it. I've debated Grayson about that too, but they've never actually even made amyloids from amino acids in the lab. Like, they basically, in order to do it, they had to like insert a template. But even if that was the case, I would still posit you still need to get to genetics. You still need to get transcription translation. You're not really jumping over these hurdles. You're just kind of pushing back, you know, the idea and saying, okay, well, it can reproduce. So that could be considered reproduction, even though that reproduction is harmful in living organisms. You still have to jump over the hurdle of like getting DNA and, you know, carrying out its code.
Sure. We've been going for an hour. Do you have any like questions that you want to ask?
No. Just check out the paper I linked. Maybe I'll DM it to you.
Do that, because DM it to me.
Okay. Thank you for the convo.